Welcome to the Mostly Mom podcast, where we have conversations about being a mom and all the other things we do along the way that make us who we are. Hi, I'm Kristen Shelvin. While my days are filled with many roles and responsibilities, Mostly Mom is my favorite title. I think normal moms have the best stories, but they don't usually get to share them. I'd like to take some time to sit down with a fellow mom to discuss the good and the hard, the joy and the sorrow, what we're facing in our current season of motherhood, and lessons we've learned along the way. I hope you are encouraged, challenged, and inspired by these conversations.
I guess I would have to start my story. My dad told me a story, actually, of his life that happened. So my mom was pregnant with my brother. It was the Vietnam War in 1967, 68, I guess. And he was standing in line. He was like letter C or something. So they went A, B, C. And so it was very, he gets the letter. He tells my mom. They weren't married at the time, but they were getting married. And he ended up having to tell her, I've been called up to go to war for the draft.
Wow.
Of course, there's a panic. She starts praying, of course. She's always been devout. She was devout Catholic and just a real, such a prayerful woman, always such a prayerful woman. But even still, so he calls her up. He tells her they of course, cry. And he's standing in line and this woman comes up to him, and has no idea who this woman is. He has no idea why she picked him out, but she looked at him, and he's 18, right, getting ready to go, and he's fully willing to do his duty.
Yeah.
She looked at him, and she said, "Show me your papers," and he showed them to her, and it said that he was in the right group, and she said, "How old are you?" He said, 18. "Are you in school?" "No." "Do you have a baby on the way, or are you married?" And he goes, "I have a baby on the way." She said, "You should not be in this line. Whoa. This is not your group." And so she pulls him out and puts him at the back of the line, where they then said, "You have a baby on the way. Therefore, you are exempt from going to war right now." And I think about that, and I think about the ripples that then caused. And I look at my own life. So God did something there that created something else. And so where does my life reflect that sacrifice or that willingness or that decision that the Lord made for my dad's life? And so as I grew up, my dad always was, I mean, he worked hard. We were poor. He was a manager at JCPenney for my whole life and growing up. And my mom was at home as often as she could be when they had taxes due. She always went to work. During Christmas season, she always went to work. And I remember my dad picking us all up, putting us in the car so he could go pick up my mom because she was working a swing shift or a late shift or something, because they had to work it out so they didn't have to pay babysitters and all of that. And they made it work. I remember my mom opening the cupboard at times, and there would be maybe 3 cans in these empty cupboards. And she would just very jovially look at us and say, "Huh, I feel like old mother's Hubbard's. What do you think we're having for dinner this evening?" And she always came up with something, and there was always a meal on the table. And they never took handouts. They never signed up for food stamps or any of that kind of stuff. They just made it work with whatever they had. And we all learned a great work ethic. My dad grew up as a migrant worker, and my mom just helped out her family. She was among the youngest of 10 kids. And so they had really strong work ethic anyway.
Yeah.
My mom recognized that, or they decided that they were going to be a family that sat down to dinner together every night. And my dad would walk in, and it was always so cute because my mom, before she knew about when he was coming home, and she would run to the bedroom and she would put on makeup and she would change her clothes when she would have been in sweats all day long.
So sweet.
Isn't that sweet? But she always had dinner on the stove, kind of ready. She'd be in the process. And my dad would come in and he always found her first. He always hugged her and kissed her, sometimes a little more passionately than we needed to see.
Like, Mom's dad.
It's very sweet. Anyway, and then we'd sit at the dinner table, and my dad wouldn't let anybody get up from the dinner table until everybody had an opportunity to speak. Mm. And so we would tell our stories. Well, here's what's going on for the day. This person said this about this person, and I couldn't even believe it. And here's how practice was going, and here's what the coach is doing right now. And I had three other brothers and sisters that I was growing up with, my sister and two brothers, and that was our family. And so I feel like that would be where my story starts. And so when it was time to go to college, we worked as soon as we were 16. Mm-hmm. We got our driver's license and we went and got a job.
Yep.
And I think it was within days, one right after the other. And knowing, you know, that we were poor, but knowing also that we wanted future. We wanted to go to college and we wanted to be able to support ourselves, but mm-hmm. live in, you know, our parents' house and not have to ask them for anything mm-hmm. anymore. And so we worked, but we also got good grades. You know, I had a great high school experience. We were all athletic. And so I remember I get frustrated in the homeschool world sometimes because I'm like, okay, so I was able to hold a 3.5 GPA. I was able to play sports and work and get all my stuff in. And so it frustrates me when my own kids say, it's too much, I can't do it.
Or when you have that kid that says, I can't turn the paper in because blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's actually no reason. you're maybe be spending your time doing things that are a little bit not as net, you know, just set your priorities. And so that's how we've had an opportunity to help our kids.
Yeah.
Right. You have nothing. You have no idea. You don't have to go 2 miles to get your water. You don't have. Yeah.
Yeah. Blah.
It makes me crazy. Anyway. So
what sports did you play? Remind me.
Yeah. So it was in our school, I was able to be a cheerleader and play volleyball at the same time because our cheerleading counted as a PE credit. So we could take it during the school day. So then I was able to play volleyball at the same time. And then I ran track 1 year and I played baseball for a while, but mostly in high school, I played volleyball and super fun. I enjoyed it so much. Yeah. I call myself the runt of my family because everybody else was very athletic. I mean, like, you know, noticed by colleges and all of that. They were all very athletic. And my dad couldn't speak to me on that level, and nor could my mom. And so we had to find other things that we could talk about, which actually, I would say, bled into a different relationship that I have with my parents than my brother and my sister. They were, like I said, very athletic and in front of the newspaper in our town, you know, all of that. And so I grew up in the sports world for sure. I enjoy football. I have my fantasy team. I understand it. I am the one that sits down with our boys to explain the game to them.
I love it.
I know. It's that, you know, I get that opportunity to encourage those that are athletic in my house.
Yeah.
To think about it differently. But at the same time, as Garrett and I have raised our own family, just we have to think about it as a team.
Yeah.
You make your teammates look good no matter what.
Yeah.
Right? You don't throw anybody under the bus. These are those mantras, right, that we share. And, like, this is who you have for the rest of your life, brothers. And so recognize that. Mm-hmm. We don't attack them, right? You have an opportunity. I was just talking to them even just yesterday. You have the power of blessing and cursing in your own mouth.
Yeah.
Right? If we're looking at the two mountains, right, in the Bible where it talks about the mountain of blessing and the mountain of cursing, and when you choose a road, right, then the curses can come on you, or and the blessings can come on you. And so we, in our own verbiage, have an opportunity to bless one another or to curse one another. So you think about what you're saying before you say it, right? As we, I don't know, the other thing that continues to, I guess, surface is just the idea of culture, right? You create a culture. Mm-hmm. What is that culture? The culture that my parents created in their own, in our house, was a culture of family. And we really did, I would say, stick up for one another. My brother would drive me to practice, or he'd drive me from practice to work, because he usually had to work also. And he always made sure that I had money in my pocket in case I needed something to eat or in case I had a break. And he always would ask that question as just my older brother, you know. And I just, that's that culture of we care for one another and we take care of each other.
Yeah.
And in this, you know, bringing that into our own home, just that we take care of one another and we support each other, and we sit and we have a family dinner every night. We offer dinner. Yeah. We keep our door open so that anyone can come in and enjoy that dinner with us.
You're so good at that. Just bringing people in and scooping people up and feeding them and asking them how they are.
I see
a lot of your dad's intentionality in the way that you do things too.
It's a sweet legacy. And again, it comes back to that ripple effect. Like, what did he do? I remember in the summers, as I grew up, we lived in a small cul-de-sac, and there were multiple kids in our neighborhood. And there were a couple of summers, you know, before everybody's driving. But at the same time, we're all old enough to, you know, stay out in the evenings and have bonfires and sleepovers and tents and all of that. And there was enough of us that we had a running kickball game that we would do. And my dad would get home from work, and he would right away put on his basketball shoes, and he would collect anybody in the neighborhood who wanted to play. And like, all the kids would come to our neighborhood and play, or our basketball hoop, and play basketball with my dad and my brothers and anyone else. All the friends would come and play basketball with my dad. And then they would have the weekends, they would have an open door. Like, they just would sit, our kitchen table faced the front door. And so they would be sitting at the front door, and neighborhood kids would just come in and out and sit at the table with them. They didn't have much to offer, but they always had cookies, or they always had snacks or something for anybody. Like, they just were those, there are just those kind of people. They enjoy having people come just to fellowship. And I just, that impacted me so much that I wanted to create that same culture, right, for our own kids and our own families. And again, like, it always starts with food.
Yeah.
I love food. You know that, right? So we start with food. We have food to offer. Come and enjoy something, or have a cup of coffee, or have a tea, or whatever. And people are that piece that bonds us, that keeps us human, right? Like, that we see one another as valuable. You know, you just never know when you're going to be entertaining angels.
Yeah.
So you should keep your door open.
Yeah.
Because you just never know. So Garrett didn't grow up that way. My husband, he didn't grow up that way. His mom didn't love to cook. When she cooked, it took, it would take her all afternoon to make one portion of what we would consider a whole meal. Right. So if she's making meatloaf, there were no sides that went with the meatloaf, because she spent the afternoon making the meatloaf.
Okay.
Right. And so they would have meatloaf, and then they would have to find something to go with it. And that was only when she cooked. So she worked at a bank. So she was very 9-to-5 every day, had babysitters throughout the summer until they didn't need to have babysitters anymore. And then his dad owned a service station in their town, a very small town, and sweet. But before he could help at this service station, his dad was then also gone all day long, right? He would come home, have lunch, take a nap, And then, and his dad was like 16 years older than his mom. And so he was already pretty aging by the time Garrett was in a position to help out at the, you know, at the service station. So he didn't grow up in a family that sat together and ate dinner together or anything. And so that was, again, one of those things that right when you get married, you start to realize what is it that you want and what is it that you were missing or what is it that you can bring to that table, I guess.
Yeah, and those questions of what do we want to do that's the same?
Yes.
And what do we want to do that's different?
Yes.
We get to start at the starting line. Like
right.
We get to look out and cast a vision for what this is going to look like.
Right. And what impact, right? If you take that first story of my dad, like what impact is this going to have on their lives and for generations, right? Like what kind of culture do we want to create in our home? And having me stay home was definitely one of those cultures that we wanted to create. And at the same time, I, as a woman of the 90s, right? I went to college. We didn't know we could have children, or we didn't think we could have children. And so I failed out of college, got married. I was working retail and thinking, I just want to have babies. And then it wasn't happening and it wasn't going to happen. And so I went back to college. And of course, you go back to college and your head is sort of filled with all the opportunities that are out there with what you could do, right? Well, then babies came and now we're home with our babies, but also have this idea of what else could I do? And then that's when you start to, I think, realize, like, what are my talents? Mm-hmm. What is it that I bring? And that's that piece where the Lord says, you have a talent. Everybody has that talent. And we don't want to bury those. We want to multiply them. And so what does it look like to multiply a talent in our own lives that, I guess, affects others? I don't know. That's where, again, you go back to culture. So we can start with our own family.
Yeah.
Or we can just, I mean, I think we've always had an open door policy. We've always had a, please come and enjoy what we have, or let me sit with you, or let me make space for you. And just that timing is important. And time, I guess, with people is important. People matter. Yeah. We've always been connected to food. We owned a coffee shop right away when we first got married.
Yeah.
Like within, well, he sold insurance for a couple of years and I don't think he really loved that. But, and then we owned a coffee shop and I think that's where we were able to continue or to like start to build that culture because we didn't have kids yet. And, but we could bring in that idea of gathering around food and then being available, I guess.
I love it.
Yeah.
Busy families need all the help they can get to stay organized. Enjoy your ordinary everyday as you manage your household with these easy-to-use printables. These digital download planning pages include sheets for homework, chores, summer activities, meal planning, weekly calendars, year-at-a-glance planning, and more. Make your fridge look cute. Or create a family binder to keep everyone organized. Purchase once and print forever. Weekly planning pages are bundled in Monday Start or Sunday Start format. For a limited time, buy the bundles at a 40% discount and get the liturgy prints as a bonus. The Get Ready Checklist and Summer Checklist are my favorites. Each of my kids knows exactly what's expected and they take responsibility for what's on their list. Not just for the kids, there are also downloads you can use for vacation planning, grocery shopping, and habit tracking. Go to ordinaryeveryday.studio for the link.
When you were growing up, so thinking about your dad and your mom and that culture of the table, did you see it when you were in it? Or did you notice that more when you were in college and post-college looking back?
I would say I saw it when I was in it because my friends did not have it.
Yeah.
And oftentimes they wanted to come and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And so I would say yes, I saw it when I was in it. I saw it during those summers when people would just gather at our table. And I don't remember ever gathering at anybody else's table.
Yeah.
Right. It was wanting to be around my parents. They're funny. My dad was funny. Mm-hmm. I thought he was, I loved his stories. He loves telling stories and he has great stories. Even when I was in college and I would be home mm-hmm. or I would not go home for Thanksgiving, it was still, I would always try to create it, right? So we're all coming over to our apartment to have Thanksgiving dinner and then we're all gonna veg out and watch movies for the rest of the evening. And whoever doesn't have a place to go, please come here. You know, yeah. I feel like we did that. I don't know. I feel like that was always part of who I am to be, again, gather around food. I love gathering around food, well, around a table.
And even the work that you're doing now. So mm-hmm. the work you did occasionally back when your kids were little mm-hmm. was around food and mm-hmm. hospitality. And now you and your son, Caleb, have yes. this little gig you guys are up to with do. Food and hospitality. So yes. it's definitely your thread
yeah.
that weaves in and out of everything.
It is. And my degree is in food management. And so having an opportunity to work with the catering operation at the university was really, really good. And just fed that, just gathering of people and... Yeah, it's been sweet. It was super important for me to teach my boys how to cook. Mm-hmm. But there's actually five things that they had to learn before they could leave our house. And one of them was to cook. And then the others were do the toilets, do your laundry, pick up after yourself, and learn how to dance. And the dancing one is the one that could keep all of them at home because, and in fact, my oldest son is so shy that we ended up having to host a dance just so that we could fulfill, like hold our line that you needed to dance. And so we ended up hosting a dance at our house, like a Virginia reel with a collar.
So fun.
And moved everything out of the living room. And we had one other family over and it was super sweet. And he had an opportunity to dance with his wife there, not knowing it was going to be his wife at the time. But before he got out of, he knew she was always the one. But yeah, super sweet. The other ones, I don't know. Charlie's definitely, he's been to a dance. He's okay. He's like, I'm not going again. Caleb's the one that we have to get to the dance. You're just going to have to go to a dance, learn how to dance.
Yeah.
It's like, we practice in our room. I'm like, yeah, but that's not the same
that
thing.
That doesn't count. It's not the same. Oh, funny. So you have these four boys.
Yes.
Somewhere along the way, you decided that you wanted to educate at home. I feel like we have one of two stories. We have one version where, for those of us who have homeschooled, mm-hmm. we knew it was what we wanted to do and yeah. it's what we did. And we went full throttle.
Yeah.
And then there's those of us who were sort of blindsided by yeah. an opportunity and mm-hmm. saw something sweet and rich and decided to sort of pivot toward something different, something good.
Yeah.
What's your version?
So I told you that I had a great high school experience. I had lots of friends. It was not hard for me. I felt like I got a great education. I did fine on all my SATs and ACTs and I learned how to write, whatever, like all of those things.
Same. Yeah. Like I had the same experience.
Yeah. I mm-hmm. had a great high school experience and going to the next step, going to college was perfectly great. It was just what we did. And my husband, however, did not have a great experience at all. And in fact, it makes us all angry. We get super defensive and we want to go after the people who bullied him. And we have this. And so I can totally understand where he was coming from. But so he was the one who said, Tracy, I just really think we need to homeschool our children. When we have children, I want to homeschool our children. And then we were in a church where everybody homeschooled. And so definitely the influence was there. Why would you do anything different? Mm-hmm. And all of that. And I just would always look at him, listen, whatever we decide to do, I don't know if I'm going to do it forever. I'll try it, but I'll go and sit with people and I don't know if that's what I want to do. I don't know if that's where I'm being called. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I talked to other families who would say, well, this public school needs Christian kids too. And I don't know if I don't love that. And I don't love it now. And then it was an out, mm-hmm. right, for me. So we have Sam we get Sam, right? So, 'cause he was adopted. And so we have Sam, and I'm raising him, and I'm teaching him things, and you know, of course, we still belong to this church, and so I'm still influenced by all of these. And when he was two, I went and sat with my friend, who was already homeschooling six kids, and I sat with her to see how it was done. Mm-hmm. And oh, okay, this seems fine. And then we start a little preschool, and okay, like, this seems fine. I just don't know if I'm giving him everything I need. And then I noticed that I would get frustrated if he wasn't doing what I asked him to do. And honestly, I look back now, and I just, those are the times where I wish I could go back, and I wish I could speak kindly, and I wish I could see him for who he was, and just instead of trying to make him who I wanted him to be. Mm-hmm. But he's five. We've built two houses by now, and we've had, so I have him, and I have a 9-month-old. I have my little Dutch. And, you know, when he was four, I'm just teaching him how to read. And that's all, I mean, a four-year-old, right? He's picking up on it super fast. I remember one time I was so frustrated because he was reading, and he was like, and I was like, Sam, you've seen this word before. You know this word. He's like, Mom, I can't see it. The page just keeps going black on me. And I, in my stubbornness, was like, fine, I'm taking you to the doctor, with just like, almost as a threat. Isn't mm-hmm. that terrible? Mm-hmm. All these things. Here I'm confessing. Anyway, so I call the doctor, and I take him in, and the doctor looks at me, and he says, will you get the Good Mom Award? And I'm like, you did not see the blackness in my heart as I was getting ready to bring him here. But apparently he has this degenerative eye thing that, had we not brought him in, then it's what causes your eye to go lazy, right? And so because we were able to catch it so quickly, his eyes are straight and he's able to see, and he has still, it's a degenerative eye thing, but we've been able to correct quite a bit of it, and he's able to see, like, and was able to then read, and like his whole world, which I had no idea, his whole world was opened up to him. And so then it made it so much easier, obviously, to homeschool. And even still, I was still at that, like, I'm not sure we're going to do it next year. Okay, kindergarten. I can do kindergarten. Okay, we'll do kindergarten. And then first grade comes around, and I'm like, okay, I'll do first grade. But I also have little baby now, and I don't know how I'm going to fit it in. And then I get pregnant with the next one, and Dutch, my second, was crazy. He very much just marched to his own beat. He's that, like, I'm going to do my own thing. And so he was hard, but, and then we get pregnant again, and we have Charlie, and we're building a house. And I'm like, I don't know, this can't be good for these kids. I am crazy. And Garrett, the whole time, he's like, Trace, I think you're going to be okay. And talking to other families, all you have to do is read to them when they're that age. Just read to them. It'll fill their brain. You have to do what's best for you at this point, right? Read to them. Pay attention to them. I'm like, yeah, but what about math? And I get so frustrated. And anyway, on and on. This is all part of my story. And then finally, I'm pregnant with the fourth one. I'm almost 40. And we're just about time. I called my husband one day, and I was like, something's got to give. I can't do this. I have all these little babies. None of them are in school, but I have Sam in school. He's doing third grade, and we were with another family, and we were doing it all together, and or just the two of us. And I was thankful for that other kid because it kept me on track. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I would get frustrated so easy, and I was like, this can't be good for him, for to have this crazy mom who's completely unstable trying to work, you know, trying to teach this kid when he's really learning how to manage mom, how to do something so that mom doesn't get so mad, right? And so I ended up sending him to Petra for a year. And I knew that was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And it was. Yeah. We had the most amazing person as our tutor or our teacher at the time. Mm-hmm. She was super welcoming. All the other moms were like, great, it's the first day of class. It's fourth grade, right? You don't cry when you leave your kid at fourth grade.
Oh, some of us do every time.
Oh my gosh. So I'm like, okay, leave my son, and cried all the way home. And at the same time, and I think it was like maybe 2 weeks, and I was giving birth to my next child, and I was so thankful to have the time and to have, and I had postpartum really, really bad, which who knew, right? It was bad. And so I was thankful for that Sam was taken care of, that he was being educated, and the others, we watched a lot of movies. We read a lot of books. We slept.
Snuggled up on the couch. Took
we
naps.
Played a lot of Legos, right? And which was good. It was fine. But then it was about, so things were starting to clear, postpartum's ending, babies are growing up. And I decided to go ahead and start. It was the end of his fourth grade year, and I started bringing science projects into the classroom, and then I wanted to be in the classroom more and more. And I realized at that point I really did want to homeschool. And so then I was all in.
Yep.
And I spent the summer on the treadmill reading The Well-Trained Mind, knowing we wanted to educate classically. Mm-hmm. I was going to be ready for this, and went to a couple of conferences out in Washington and, you know, saw a couple of things, kind of created my curriculum. I was ready to go. And then my husband brought home a puppy, and I about lost it. That took a minute, and I still can't even believe he did it. But we have a puppy, and that could be a whole nother podcast on marriage.
Marriage and pets.
Anyway, so I'm homeschooling, and then my friend went to an open house for classical conversations, and she called me and she asked, she said, "Trace, this is cool. I don't know if it's for my kids or if it's for my grandkids, but I think you need to see this." And mm-hmm. so that February, I went to the open house because they had a second one in February. And I went and I called my husband and I said, this is it, because I was part of the co-op, mm-hmm. which is great. It was really good. But I found myself working for my class that mm-hmm. I had to teach and not actually educating my children as well as I could be. Excuse me, still felt like I needed something like to round us out. Like, what am I missing? I want them to have the fullness of the well-trained mind, mm-hmm. but that felt daunting mm-hmm. because there were so many things.
That book is this thick. It is overwhelming.
Yes. And I would assign, poor Sam, the oldest is always the guinea pig, but I would assign him things and he would try, and then I would not go back and double check what he was doing. And that is the key to homeschooling well. If you're going to say that you want your student to do something, then you have to check on them. You have to check what they're doing. They need to be praised for what they did, and they need to be encouraged in what they could do better mm-hmm. in a gentle way, right? And I never went back. And so by the end, I can't even say by the end, by October, we were back to Shirley English and Saxon math, because those were the ones I had to sit with him. I couldn't just assign and leave. Mm-hmm. And so then we would read the story of the world for our history, and that essentially was our curriculum, was just those three things. And then we would just read good books and we'd go to the library. And I think back now, that actually was enough. Even still, I wanted something that continued to keep us accountable. Mm-hmm. And so that's where classical conversation seemed to fit that bill for us. Yeah. And so I got out of that meeting, that open house, and I called my husband and I said, this is it. This is what we are looking at. It couples our independent homeschool with a curriculum and gives us an opportunity to meet with people who are doing exactly the same thing at home, where they could come together and learn together. And he said, okay. And he transferred money from our savings account that day. We signed up and we joined. So at that point, CC, because they were all foundations, that point it only is 24 weeks, and we joined on week 17. So we had no idea what they had learned before. We didn't have any books. We just said, this is where we want to be, and so this is what we'll do on this day. And so we still part of the co-op, so we did the co-op on Thursdays, and then we went to CC on Fridays, and that was how we rounded out our weeks. That was when I said yes. Like, we went from, I think, two families in that spring to then a full campus of families, which was very cool, including a junior high, which was also very cool. And then just, I love it. You know, you talk about what you love.
Yeah.
And I loved it for my family so much that I wanted everybody to join me. Come and be a part of what we're doing. And I want to see you for who you are. And and then now, like, here we are 12 years later. Hmm. And I have just two left. And there was so many, like, opportunities to come alongside moms. I remember being that mom, getting ready to get with their first child going into junior high, and the tears and the heartache, like, but wait, I still have more I want to teach you as a little tiny baby, like a little kid in grammar school, and now you're going into junior high, and then how many moms I got to sit with to just, like, they're actually going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then now, as we move, you know, all the stages, being able to walk among moms at all the stages, just, like, again, you go back to pick your math. Keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy your kids.
Mm-hmm.
See them for the gifts that they have and are. I mean, obviously, we correct and we give guardrails.
Yes.
Right? And when they know that they know where their guardrails are and they have them solid, and you know that you're not going to be, then that's when our kids can run as fast as they can within those guardrails and let them explore everything. And I think that was one of the things that Garrett and I, when we first started homeschooling, when I was all into homeschooling, I just said, okay, but wait, I want to make sure that our kids have all the opportunities that a public education student would have, right? Like, if they have special needs at some level, I want to make sure they can get those. If they want to play sports, I want to make sure that they can play competitive sports on a team that where they are with kids who they make them better, where they can be better. And I want to make sure they go to college if that's what they want. I want to make sure they can pass all their tests. So I think as far as championing homeschool, like, it's championing, I guess, bringing all of those talents together from all the walks, right? Every mom that's in a community has a talent, has something to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to offer a space for each of those people to be able to bring that talent and encourage those students, because our mission field, ultimately, if I go back to my dad, right, our mission field is our children.
Yeah.
And so when we can pour into them with a foundation of love, of the Lord, of morality, of gentleness, of peace, of grace, all of those things, when we can pour in, we need to provide that space so that culture that is in our home then becomes our culture that we create in whatever community that we belong to.
Yeah.
And of course, we always bring food. Because everybody eats, and it's the most basic thing we do. And so, we bring what we can.
I love it. Yeah. It's all such good, rich stuff, Tracy.
Thanks.
There's all these questions that I have that I always want to ask my guests. And when I look at my list, we've actually talked about a lot of them.
Good.
Without even asking the question, which I think is great. I want to, though, you talked about some things maybe you wish you could have done differently.
Mm.
You've talked about some times when you changed your mind and shifted and pivoted.
Yeah.
What is one of your deep joys of being with your boys?
my very favorite thing is to watch them encourage and enjoy each other.
Yeah.
And just to see brothers come together as brothers is the sweetest thing I think I've ever seen. And just like they love their mom, which is precious. And at the same time, and so they're always correcting each other in the way that they talk to when they hear somebody speaking to me in a way that isn't as respectful, you know, or whatever, which is very precious. Or mm-hmm. we don't say those things in front of mom, or you don't talk to mom that way or whatever. But at the same time, like the way that they, I guess, help each other out and encourage each other and love one another and laugh with each other is the most precious thing. That's the thing that brings me the greatest joy, I would say. Their relationships with each other, the way that they, yes, I mean, they're brothers, right? They recognize that they're all different. They recognize that there are certain things in each other that they don't like.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they are sweet. They encourage each other. They have joy for one another. They support each other.
They're their team.
They are their team. Exactly. They recognize. And what's really cool is having Dutch come home from college, right?
Yeah.
As he has been at home, he's like, yeah, I really think you should talk to Caleb about doing this thing because he is really good at that. Mm. I'm not really the one to, I will correct papers, but if you want anything drawn, you're going to want to talk to Caleb. Or yeah, I think it would be really great for Charlie to go learn Spanish and go to this soccer thing. You know, just like they support one another or like.
And advocating for each other.
They really do. And just like, as I see, even Sam, you know, he'll come down to the house and they were talking about cars and Dutch is like, I just am going to need you to show me how to take care of this piece of my car because I have no idea. And Sam's like, yeah, just bring it up and let's take care of that. Or, hey, I understood that you needed this done, so I went ahead and took care of it for you. And, like, these are things unbeknownst, mm-hmm. you know, unbeknownst to Garrett and I.
You're not coaching it. It's just happening.
It's just happening. And it's really sweet. I would say that because then I know, right, you know that they have each other.
Yeah. What is something that's surprised you, that's kind of blindsided you, good or bad, that you weren't really expecting about being a mom?
I would say having to walk through death with the boys. Like when we first took Nana in to knowing that she was at the end, you know, that we had a few years left. And you know, right away when they tell you it's Alzheimer's, then they say you could have 3 years, you could have 8 years. You just don't know. It could be, but we do know that she can't live by herself, right? So
to pause you for just a second to catch our listeners up, you and your family have been housing and hosting and caring for your mother-in-law for the past 3 years?
3 years, yeah.
And she's been slowly declining.
Yep.
And you and your family have been caring for her in your home.
Yes.
So that's Nana, and it's changed your world and the way your family has operated for the last few years.
Mm-hmm. It has. And I look at, so she came when Dutch was a junior in high school. Charlie was a freshman in high school, and Caleb was barely in the seventh grade, mm-hmm. right? So there's a lot that happens in development in those years, and so making a space for her and recognizing that, you know, the immediate let's go away for the weekends are gone because mm-hmm. you have to have somebody there to take care of Nana or to just hang out with her. And so Lisa, Garrett's sister, moved to within a mile of our house, she and her family. And that happened probably maybe 3 years ago. So we had already brought her home. And so Lisa would come and hang out with her on the days when I would mm-hmm. go right to teach classes or whatever. But the boys still skied and Garrett had a ski pass and we didn't have additional help. So if nobody was at the house, I was the one because I was home, right? And so then, so I got frustrated for sure. And it was a lot. It felt like a lot. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot. It was a lot. Yeah. It's too much for one person. And so Michaela, Sam's wife, stepped right in and she was like, we'll take a day, whatever you need. You just tell me what day that is. And so she started taking a day, which was very sweet, and just to give me an opportunity to mm-hmm. go do something else. Lisa was taking probably 20 hours a week. And so she had taken a couple of extra days, one of them mm-hmm. being on a weekend day, which was nice because we would go to church mm-hmm. and that way we could. And then only just this last April did we get extra help into the house. And that made a huge, huge difference. The other thing that surprised me is how often the boys will come and they'll just hold me for a minute just to say, how are you doing, Mom? Or like, you're doing great, or just to encourage me. And I think that has been like, yes, I see them having each other back, but at the same time, knowing that they have my back too, and they recognize that this is hard. And I mean, even now we're at the end, right?
Yep.
Nana's at the end. And,
walking
that with them and them being willing to say, you guys go ahead and go out on a date. You and Dad need to go have time together. I don't mind staying here. Or just like, all right, we have to be here because Nana's here. And just recognizing that as they've gotten their driver's licenses and they've, you know, wanted to have friends over, all of those things changed.
Yeah.
And one of them having to give up their bedroom and make it into something else. And
the willingness that they've entered into this new season that your family's been in.
Yeah, it is.
In a really sweet way.
It has been sweet. It's been really sweet to watch Charlie. He's always very observant. He's also the one to judge quickly. Mm-hmm. And he would say that too, right? And he's very practical. He has been so, Caleb and Dutch are so sensitive, like they have sensitive hearts, right? And so they can sense things super quick, like big hugs and all of that. And Charlie, to see him come in and be that sensitive style and that quick to say, yeah, like he's quick to say, I don't see any reason why I can't do whatever it is you're asking me to do. And I mean, and I don't know how much of that goes through his head. He doesn't say anything. He's just quick to say yes. Hey, buddy, can you unload the dishwasher? Sure. Hey, buddy, can you take care of this thing? Sure. Do you mind this or that? You know, and he hasn't complained and he doesn't fight us on any of it. He just, this is what we do.
It's so great when you see your kids becoming themselves and becoming the adults that you spend all these years training them up toward.
Right. And so, that's been surprising, I think, more than they've just handled it all so graciously. And, you know, there was times where they would just be telling Nana stories that they knew she would never remember and just the little things.
Given your current situation, right, you have a lot of different phases of life in your home at the same time.
Yeah.
With Nana, with a married son.
Yeah.
With a granddaughter.
Yeah.
You have college kids. You have high school kids figuring out what the next season looks like.
Yeah.
You're still parenting those kids. They're not away. They're not done yet.
Yeah.
You could give us so much wisdom, but if you had to just look somebody like yourself in the face and give them a couple things of advice of how to do it well, what would you tell them?
I would say don't look at the whole, take it in pieces.
Yeah.
Each person is individual. They need something different. Seek the Lord. See Him in them in a moment. Because that's what they need right at that moment. And so being able to switch from right now, Nana needs me to brush her teeth in the very simplest of things. Or right now, my husband needs me to give him a hug because this is hard. And right now, my son needs to tell me all about this anime thing that he just learned about. Mm-hmm. Or my son needs to tell me all about this game, this soccer game that he watched. Or he needs me to throw the ball at his feet so that he can get a good one touch on it or whatever, right? Or right now, yesterday, sweet Aubrey came over. She was there and she needed to be heard.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's just like, I would say take each person individually as if they're the only one in front of you at that moment.
Yeah.
Because that time is fleeting and it's short. And I recognize that there's a lot of components. I recognize that there are times when I had babies at my feet and there were other needs that needed to be met. And I get it. And when we can be present and intentional with that one person that's in front of us at that moment, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
And seeing each person as made in the image of God, being okay with saying, I want to hear what you have to say, but I need to take care of this right now, mm-hmm. so that that other person recognizes that they're not the center of the whole world, but that they're a part of this beautiful world and that they are important. Mm-hmm. I would say that.
That's good.
That's what I would say today. Ask me tomorrow. It could be a whole different story.
Well, and that's just it, right? Like, yes. Different days, they need different things.
Yep.
And there's a different piece of wisdom for this day, and there's another one for tomorrow.
There is.
Yeah.
Yep. It's simple.
Are you ready for the rapid fire? I've got a handful of questions.
Okay.
What are you reading right now?
I'm reading Women's Wisdom, Everyday Holiness, and a Newbery Award winner called Jewels of the Wolves. Yeah, it's super sweet. It's sweet. I also just read the Six Types of Working Genius, which I highly recommend. It was excellent. Anyway.
What's the first thing that you do in the morning?
I get out of bed, and I don't get out of bed. I pray prior to getting out of bed. I feel like the Lord wakes me up about an hour before I'm actually supposed to get up, and I start praying then. And then I get out of bed and I go make myself a cup of coffee.
Do you have a prayer that you, like a liturgy, or is it just whatever that day brings to mind?
It usually is something along the lines of, let me do what you desire this day, or it's a specific, bless this person and keep them safe, or, you know, whatever he brings,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah, I would say that's what I do as I'm laying in my bed.
What's the last thing that you do at night?
Mm-hmm. I thank the Lord for this day. And my husband and I will pray together. And sometimes I go to bed before he does. And sometimes I go to bed after he does. And if I go to bed before he does, I still thank the Lord for whatever it was in that day. And then he'll grab my hand and he'll pray, not knowing that I can actually hear him. And then sometimes if I go to bed after him, I'll always hear him praying before I get into bed. You know, it's just, sometimes I'll come in and join him, or sometimes I just end up saying what I need to say and then going to sleep. Yeah.
What's saving the day right now?
Coffee saving the day. I think opportunities and cookies. I've been making a lot of cookies lately. In fact, I even just woke up this morning and I was like, because of where we are with Nana, right? It brings me a lot of comfort. I made sugar cookies last night. Went and got eggs so I can make flourless chocolate cake today. All the things. Fudge.
Yum.
Yeah.
All the things.
All the things.
What is something that people get wrong about you?
I honestly don't think about what they think about me. So I have no idea.
That's the best answer.
I don't know.
You're overwhelmed. Caught in a moment of anxiety or stress. What's the first thing you do?
Breathe. The first thing I do is breathe. God's got this is my mantra.
Describe an everyday, ordinary moment that brings you joy.
Yep, it's coffee. So I sit, Garrett has coffee at 2:30 in the afternoon. And so oftentimes I will try to get a coffee and sit down with him. Or the other thing is when he comes home. He comes in, there was one moment that he came in and he said, I have slain all the dragons, and my castle is safe, and my princess is here. Oh. And isn't that precious? And so there is that moment, and I know that in my actions, I don't always show that that's one of my favorite times of day, but it feels like home mm-hmm. when he walks in the door. Then all is well.
Everybody's here. The last person's in the door.
Yes, it's good.
Any last words? Anything we forgot to talk about?
I don't know, Kristen. I just think as moms, and we're juggling a lot, and I think it's okay to let them drop every once in a while, and it's okay to put them down sometimes.
So good.
And it's good to breathe and see ourselves also as made in his image. I was thinking on the way over here that, like, there was a moment in my life where when I first came to know the Lord, I was enamored with him. I thought he was the coolest thing ever. But then there was a moment where I knew that he was then enamored with me. Mm. And I think that was the moment where I realized that we could have a relationship together. And I think holding on to that has been grace for me. That's what I would say.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for everything. Thanks for what you do.
This is great.
It's been really lovely.
So happy to sit with you, and I want to do it again.
Okay. Thanks.
The Mostly Mom podcast is a production from Ordinary Everyday Studio. Find us on Instagram and online at ordinaryeveryday.studio. Audio and editing by Logan Tomorrow. Thank you for listening.